You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for May 7th, episode 3945, brought to you by Farnam and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control. Good morning, Horse World.
How is Mary?
Pretty good. Gearing up for a lot of stuff, actually, that I'm working on. I'm gearing up for a horse show next week. I am finally starting to put some online content together. It's really hard, especially when you have an ADHD brain. So I've been working and filming with different animals, trying to make sense of it.
Well, there's so much to unpack. Where do you start?
I know. And I spent like an hour recording one of my horses yesterday, and I had it all planned. This is what I was going to show. And the horse was like, "Nah, we're not working on that." So I ended up working on something completely different. And at the end of it, the training session was good. But the videos makes no sense whatsoever, and because I changed what I was doing 40,000 times during, and I'm like, how do people do this?
See, again, that's the thing, is real world training rarely looks like the video you just watched.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And I've talked with another horse trainer before about this, about how hard it is to film and stuff. He did a trailer loading DVD many, many, many years ago. And the horse that he used as an example ended up needing a method that was totally different than one he normally uses. So like, how do you do that?
Uh-huh. It's crazy. And I think that's something we should all keep in mind. We talk a lot about how we consume our universe via TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the places. And we talk a lot about how it skews reality for us because we see an edited version or a shortened version. And I think it's important to keep in mind with horses as well, life rarely looks like that clip, good or bad. Sometimes you watch a clip that's really horrendous and go, "Oh my God, it was awful." Well, it could be that life rarely looks that bad either. You know, it's always shocking to see a thumbnail of a video when the horse is rearing and there's someone holding on to a big long rope looking surprised, and you think how horrible, but it does happen. It lasts 3 seconds. Life goes on. So we get so skewed. So what has inspired you to create some video content for the universe to consume?
Mainly that I've been trying to do it for the last decade. Also concerning, so my program is not just positive reinforcement training. It's a whole bunch of stuff. But I also,
it's integrative horse training. You talk about integrative medicine, where you take Eastern and Western, you combine them for...
Yes.
Care. You have integrative horse training.
Well, and the name that I've given the program is Alchemy in the Reins.
Ooh, I think this is very clever.
Yes, because you're taking a bunch of different elements and you're combining them to make something wholly new. So that's kind of where I was going with that. But I also noticed that a lot of people, when they incorporate clicker training, kind of skip over a bunch of steps and go to just clicking and treating the fun stuff that they want to train, which is, this is what I totally did. And there's another level to that I wish people would hang out at before just using it all willy-nilly, because they you can fall into some pitfalls with that. So I tried to film that, which is what I was filming yesterday. And like I said, the horse I was working with gave me other ideas. So we ended up working for an hour on something completely different. But
oh my gosh. Yeah. Did I see that you were working with one of your Z-Donks?
Yes, that is Z, whom I have had for several years now. Z was a project that I started. She's a lovely, I believe she's part Grevy zebra and then obviously part donkey. And the previous owner did a lot of really good work with her, especially because she was picked up at an exotic auction and I don't think had been treated particularly well. She still got a mark on her nose where the halter had kind of grown into her a little, into her face a little bit. So the lady who brought her out of that did a lot of really great work with her. But one remnant that came with Z that I didn't know about is that she likes to pull the halter and lead rope out of your hand and run away. So when long ears do that, it's almost impossible to fix. So I haven't done much with her over the years. She's just been kind of on the back burner. So I'm restarting her and going to teach her liberty.
That's great, because she can't rehearse that behavior, can she? There's no.
Yeah, you can't pull the lead rope out of your hand. If there's no lead rope, haha, I've solved it.
Interesting.
She's perfect to handle at home, but I decided I don't know that she's going to be suitable to like haul around the country doing tricks and stuff, but that's okay. So we're going to build on her liberty. She's so wonderful. I love her.
Now, I've always been fascinated by liberty, and my groundwork skills are average on the best day. So I've never really attempted it. What is the first and most important step if you're going to go down the road of teaching your horse liberty work? What's step one? Don't do anything else until you do this.
I would say until your horse has some good, healthy groundwork habits. And that includes being able to send your horse away from you anytime you want. Because with liberty, you're going to start encouraging something in your horse that most trainers will tell you not to do when you're starting to work with your horse. And that's creating this draw, this very powerful draw. You want your horse to be like, let me come right towards you. Let me run at you as fast as I can. You want
oh,
that.
James is going to be a candidate. Oh my gosh, he's such a Velcro pony.
Yes. So you're going to encourage that. But if you haven't put in some safety protocols ahead of time, that's where I've seen people do beautiful liberty stuff with their horse on these videos. And I've seen it happen at shows where, yes, the horse has this draw, but then the horse decides, oh, I want to playfully kick out and take out my person as collateral damage. And it's very dangerous. So I would say be able to, you know, again, good basic groundwork, control your horse's body parts, be able to send your horse away. I've told the story many times about my first Liberty project, which was Jax the Mustang, and how one day we were doing Liberty in the pasture. It was so beautiful and magical. And then the horses in the neighboring pasture were running around, and that got Jax really excited. So he started doing Liberty even harder. He started circling me like Jaws, and I could tell he wanted to kick out. And I had not put in any protocols to say, hey, go away from me a little bit. You're too close. And I actually had to run away from him and hide. It was really funny. And after that, I was like, okay, I need a button that says, you're having too much fun. You need to go over there now. So the draw is very important, and it is something you'll create in Liberty, but also being able to say, okay, you're having too much fun. You need to go away.
So because, again, I'm not good at this groundwork thing. I practice it occasionally and for very brief periods of time because I get frustrated because I'm not very good at it. So it's a vicious cycle. How do you avoid confusing the horse? You've created draw. He wants to be near you. And now you say, get away, get away, get away. And he goes, wait a minute. Don't you want me over here? How do you make that balance so that he doesn't go, which do you want?
That's where you need to really be very mindful of your body language and create consistent cues. Like one of the things where cues can get muddled for me when I'm working with a horse, and this is at Liberty or on the lead rope, is I will teach my horse to move their hindquarters away from me. And then I also have exercises where I draw the hindquarters to me. For instance, when I teach a horse to line up on the bounding block, it involves getting the hindquarters to come toward me. And I teach that where I'm standing pretty much in the same position on the same side of my horse. So how do they know when I'm waving my prop or I'm moving my hand, this means move away and this means move toward? Well, I had to create two very different cues and I had to be very, very consistent about it. So you need to make sure that you have very clear and consistent cues. And then you need to make sure you reinforce the horse correctly and then that you don't accidentally reinforce when they do the wrong answer. So it takes just that consistency and clearness. And it's the same rules that, you know, when you're doing normal groundwork or riding, is to be clear, consistent, follow through.
All right. So one of the things this is going to be Jennifer's going to ask all the questions day, by the way.
That works for me.
Hey, there you go. One of the things I practiced with baby horse James, he's just a 4-year-old and he has challenges in life. He is what some people call hypervigilant. He has to understand what's going on in the entire universe at all times. So one of the things I practice with him is anytime I'm leading around, I tell him that he needs to walk next to me, but he needs to walk next to me more than an arm's length away. So he's not in my pocket, because he tends to do that whenever things get too stressful for him. He literally crawls in my pocket. Don't want that. So when I do that, I have to use either the end of my rope or a flag stick to say, you need to stay over there, because he wants to just creep into my space. Are there other things I can do to help him stay over there? Because he's getting really good about it when things are quiet. But whenever he gets stressed and there's a motorcycle driving by or something like that, he still wants to creep in. And I try to find ways that I don't have to use the negative as much and do better at rewarding the positive.
Yes, there's a ton of different ways. One is when you're doing your groundwork, I would really work on shoulder control, being able to send that shoulder away. So that's a pivot on his hind end. If any of you guys show in Western events, you might have shown in showmanship. And so we practice those pivots for that. But it's something I teach all of my leading horses, because most horses that I'm training to lead have been raised around humans, and their human is their emotional support human. And so anytime something happens, they're like, I'm just going to sit in your front pocket and everything will be okay. So you need to be able to sit. Yeah. So usually they're leaning into you with that head, neck, and shoulder. So you need to practice in your groundwork, sending that body part away. I like to, once I can move that shoulder, you know, I can get it a good 90 degrees away with light cues. And I will practice this both with a crop, with the flag, and more importantly, with my own hands, because sometimes I'm leading and I don't have extra equipment. So I will practice, if I put my hands up and I kind of vibrate those hands by your head and neck, you need to move away from that.
Ooh, jazz hands for horses.
It is very much jazz hands for horses. And then what I will do is I will lead them around and I'll practice outside turns. So that's where if I'm leading on the left, I want to turn my horse to the right. So I'll walk a straight line, turn 90 degrees to the right, walk a straight line, turn 90 degrees to the right, and do that over and over again till that gets so good. Oh, and
I'm going to
so
use that
right.
One. I'm yes. using that one. Okay.
Yeah, I would just do tons and tons of walk 50 feet, turn to the right, walk 50 feet, turn to the right, and get really good at that. The other thing that
before we move to the next thing, visual yes. learner here, walk in a straight line, turn either right or left, make your choice, because I have to practice leading him from both sides because he is very much more comfortable with his humans on the right-hand side of his body, whatever we're doing. So I have to make sure uh-huh. I practice both sides. When I ask him to move away, my goal is whenever I make that 90-degree turn, he moves with me so that he stays the same distance from me. I don't end up walking towards him. He moves away with me.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
Yes.
I wanted to make sure I had the visual right.
Yes. And real quick, how I would teach that, I do this more often than not just with my hands, unless the horse is just really pushy, and then I might use another tool. But what I will do is, so I have the shank of the lead rope in my right hand. I have the tail of the lead rope in my left hand. I'm trying to imagine how I do this. It's really easy when I've got a horse in my hands. And I will make a big like swing with my body where I'm pivoting. And when I'm facing the horse, I'll bring my hands up in front of me. And if the horse isn't trying to move away, I'm going to kind of go 1, 2, 3, 4 with my hands in the air. And if they're still not moving away, then I take the heel of my hands and I tap on the horse. My right hand will be high up on their neck and the left hand will be kind of at the jaw area. And the reason I do so high up the horse's neck is because I don't have to tap very hard. And the horse is like, hey, oh, what are you doing? Oh, I don't like that. Okay, I'm going to move away. And then when they move away, so I will train this individually before I'm doing it leading. So I'll just turn and face the horse and go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if nothing happens, then I tap with the heel of my hands and I go 1, 2, 3, 4. And if the horse makes a move away, I release the pressure, but then I'll go rub them with my hands. Like, hey, you don't always have to be afraid of my hands. It's just when I'm very purposely trying to get you to move away.
Got it. So if you maintain the appropriate bubble away from your human will come over and give you lovely rubs.
Yes, because I don't want the horse to freak out just because I raised my hands. They need to know the difference between, okay, I'm turning with purpose and I'm facing you and I'm doing this really big movement with my hands saying, get out of my space. And doing it with rhythm is very important, because if you just kind of like bop your horse and then just sit there, they're not going to really understand what the heck you're doing. I'm making a very concentrated effort to say, here I come into your space. You need to move away. And I'm you can't see it, but I'm actually moving my hands when I do this.
And that's something that I've gotten a little bit better at, is because I grew up in the horse thing, that cues were vocal. We paid very little attention to our body language. It was either vocal or physical. I've gotten better about paying attention to my body language because he really pays attention to my body language. So a lot of times he does things or doesn't do things and I go, what the heck, you know, WTF? And then if I take that second to think about is, oh, I caused that to happen by doing something I didn't realize I was doing with my body language. If I stare at him too hard, things happen. So I've learned to be much more attuned to it. So that was a great description of the physical that happens, because he has learned if I use my arm as an extension of my body, of my bubble, that he needs to move away from that because it's going to come towards him and he needs to step away from it, because things come towards him or touch him ever so lightly, we have wonderful sensitivity. If things touch him and press, he's like a rock.
And while it's important to get your horse to understand how to move, I will also do exercises where I just lightly press on the horse, and they are supposed to, in fact, that's what I worked on with Luke yesterday. They are supposed to soften and move away from that. For this particular horse in this moment with this exercise, it's about rhythmic pressure. And here's the secret about that'll make you think more about body language is the better I use my body language, the less I have to make any sort of contact with my horse. When I move my horses around, like the other day, I was deworming everybody using, oh gosh, what's Safeguard, the pellets. And I didn't bring them all up into a small area and sort them off like I usually do because they had just gotten out on green pasture and they were really happy. Anyway, I brought the food to each horse individually. And while I was feeding the horse I wanted to get the wormer, a horse who had just finished his would come up to me and say, "Hey, I want that horse's dewormer." And so if anyone was driving by at that moment, you saw me doing all of these weird movements to keep the other horse away, like jumping jacks and my hands in the air and weird dances and putting my hat on one hand and waving my other hand. So I'm very good with my body language so that I don't often have to follow through with more pressure. And when you're doing this, when I'm walking my horse, I'm very clear of now I'm walking forward. And instead of just kind of veering into my horse and demanding he move away, I pivot like a soldier. And my hands are kind of up like I'm holding a pizza box. And I make this big turn to him like, we are now moving this way. And if he doesn't get the hint after that, then I start, you know, moving with rhythmic pressure, saying, "Hey, move your body away from me." And then I'll just keep following through until I get the horse to step across. But everything leading up to actually having to make any sort of contact with him, I'm very clear and very big with my body language so that he understands, listen, this is what we're doing now.
Got it. Great stuff. Well, we're going to take a quick break here and chat momentarily about today's title sponsor. And as I alluded to at the beginning of the show, our title sponsor, Farnam. They've been around for years, so I should know how to say it. And Farnam makes a product called Endure Gold Killer Fly Mosquito Control. It's fly spray for your horse, and it is new. And it annihilates flies and ticks and mosquitoes with a brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care. And Endure Gold is backed by science and built for hard work. And it delivers fast knockdown for up to 14 days. You can add Endure Gold to your arsenal and upgrade your fly control rotation. And did you know, I didn't realize this till I started to do a little research, that flies can become resistant to your fly spray?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know that. So fly spray you've been using for years, or fly spray that your next door neighbor use, you spray it on there and go, "Oh my gosh, it's not working. They're landing all over my horse." You could have a resistance problem. So the fact that they've got some new technology in this product is a great thing. So if you're struggling with a fly spray that actually works, you need to check out Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control from Farnam. And this is the part of the show where we start to answer listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. So what is our first listener question and what's it about?
Our first listener question is from Kimberly. And she has a gelding named Mando. I'm pretty sure this is the one. Yeah. She says, "My horse is very friendly and thinks his mouth can be on anything. People come to a stall because he stands there, ears up, looking for something interesting. Unfortunately, it may be clothing or skin. His mouthiness extends to objects in his reach, stopping in the barn aisle to get something he's looking for, like the fire extinguisher or an electrical outlet." Oh, this sounds fun. "Grabbing a new fly spray," ironic that we were just talking about that, "and breaking it is expensive but not dangerous. He is nosy and has FOMO, fear of missing out. He has flooded stalls, ruined plumbing, destroyed every toy in less than a day, and his blanket has an insurance policy. I'm not sure how to discourage this behavior, especially outside his stall. Mando is an 8-year-old half-Arab saddlebred with a big personality. Well, that just sounds pleasant.
I can relate to this one. I'm going to have something to say.
Yes. Oh, okay. Good, good. So, yeah, he sounds high intelligent, high energy, big personality, and we might have a problem of suffering from some severe boredom or a lack of clear boundaries, and that's where we get this oral fixation and this fear of missing out, and it's because he's so bright, he needs consistent mental. So it sounds like you've got the Belgian Malinois of horses.
You can speak to this topic. Yes.
Yes, I can. Oh my gosh. So yeah, you're going to have to do so much extra. So we need to establish some clear and strict space bubbles with Mando. He needs to learn that your personal space, it's off limits, and he must not be allowed to place his mouth on your clothes. So we're going to define a space around you, a 2 to 3 foot bubble. And if he breaks that bubble, he must immediately be moved out of your bubble. So this is just like I was talking earlier about liberty and stuff of I need to be able to send my horse away. So basic groundwork with that. Find a program that you like and trust. And I would practice this and practice it consistently. If he does reach or nip or mouth, you don't just say no. Because he doesn't know, he does not speak English. He does not know what no means. But you need to immediately move his feet, ask him to back up, yield his hindquarters, and get him out of your space.
Or out of the space of the fire extinguisher that he's trying to chew on?
Well, we're gonna work on that later. This is with the people for okay. Now. So just with people, because it sounds like people are collateral damage oftentimes with Mando. So I would do a lot of just like we were talking about just now with Scooter. Yes, Scooter.
James.
I got him mixed up. Dadgummit. And you're going to work on that head, neck, and shoulder control with Mando so that when he is being a silly goose, you can say, hey, you know what? You're a little too close right now. Get out of my space. So Mando has his own space. You have your own space. And this, you are going to have to be ridiculously consistent because as long as he's been able to get away with this, you're going to have to work even longer, you know, or three times as much to start putting some boundaries in place. And you're also going to have to give him a really clear job. So like before you groom and saddle, maybe do some active groundwork with him, work on backing, work on yielding, work on lunging that, you know, can get his energy out and get his focus on you. If he does chew on the cross ties and things like that, what can work is instead of trying to rip it out of his mouth, which can be a fun game for them, maybe push it further into his mouth and wiggle it and make it uncomfortable. So if he grabs his lead rope, I'll usually grab the lead rope on the other side and brush his teeth with that lead rope a little bit until he's like, ugh, never mind. And, you know, that can be a little tricky, but you want to just kind of create discomfort around the chewing. I don't know what Mando's turnout is like, or if he has any time to have nose-to-nose contact with other horses. But if you can set this up, that might, you know, increase his socialization, that might help decrease this behavior. So as far as toys, sounds like he destroys those all the time. I have the same issue with my Malinois, and I have just accepted the fact I'm going to have to buy her a lot of toys because she loves her toys for the 8 minutes that she has them. And I have toys for her that are outdoor toys only that she gets limited access to, and that can help them last longer. But yeah, you can find some heavy duty toys and just kind of suck that you're going to have to replace them a little bit more often. You can use maybe treat dispensing type toys, heavy duty boredom busting, like like Lick-It toys or the Tough Rubber toys that can be stuffed with treats. Sometimes having a plastic milk jug that you can hang from the ceiling that can be his collateral damage toy to play
with. You know, one of my veterinarians actually recommended that because early on when I got him, I was like, this guy is so frustrating. And she said, you know, just get yourself an empty milk jug, put a couple of rocks in the bottom so it makes a lovely rattle because a lot of horses enjoy the audio. And, you know, if it lasts 3 days, there's always another milk jug available.
Yes.
Hang it up, yes. Let them chow on it and have a good time. So,
they're inexpensive. Yeah. So give him something that he can destroy besides fire extinguishers. Also, make sure he has 24 access or constant access to hay, and a heavy duty slow feed hay net can help with that. Yeah. What do you got? Because it sounds like you've also dealt with this.
James is very oral. And it's interesting because Nigel, my now retired OTTB, is one of those horses, wherever you're going, he's always touching everything and tipping it over, but he doesn't try to consume it. He just wants to see what it is, and he does it with his face. James, on the other hand, wants to consume it and actually does. He actually eats stuff. I've had to really proof because he wants toys, but then he actually eats the toys. So anyhow, one of the things that I have gotten better at is when I'm leading him around, I encourage him to keep that distance from me. But anytime we get somewhere where there's interesting things to look at, kitty cats, things on the ground, buckets, hay bales, he wants to just jump right for it. Is I don't use the lead rope to get him to not do that. So when he makes a sudden dive for a bucket that's sitting along the driveway and he wants to see what's in that bucket, rather than letting him get to the end of the lead rope and pull him away, I come towards him and move him away from the bubble that's around that bucket. Much, much, much more effective. Because every time I'd pull him away from something, he'd just go back and go to the next thing and I'd pull again and I'd pull. Nothing changed. But since I've started doing it that way, if I see him put a bead on, oh, there's the bucket along the driveway. I'm going to see what's in there. If I use my body language appropriately and I step towards him slightly and I turn towards him versus just step sideways toward him, and I'll lean in and put my hand out and he'll go, oh, that's right. I'm not allowed to do that, am I? And he'll keep going. And the habit and the tendency has gradually decreased. But if I get sloppy and start using the halter, it comes rushing right back. So the two different methods, what I'm used to, yank the halter, you just yank the halter forever, versus what I'm essentially doing is moving his feet. Sorry, you have to move backwards, sideways, whatever, because you're not going to touch that. He's learning from that. Don't bother. I just don't want to have to move my feet again. Much, much better. So that's one of the things I've learned. And something I have done with other horses, I haven't done it with James yet, is I set him up for failure. In the aisleway of the barn, I put lots of things that I don't much care about. Some empty fly sprayers, towels, brushes, things all over the barn. And I intentionally would let the horse walk along and try to touch them. But they had been poisoned with Rap-Blast. It's a product called Rap-Blast.
Oh, my goodness.
And Rap-Blast is not like anti-chew products. Rap-Blast is strong enough that if you get it on your skin, for example, on your lip or your face, it actually stings a little bit. It's that hot. It says right on the label, do not spray with near your face, because if you inhale it, it's going to get you. And it's designed specifically for this. And I found, compared to everything else I've tried, and I think I've tried just about every single chew product on the market, Rap-Blast is the only one that once he realized it was on an object, he said, not going back there. So perhaps you could rehearse some things. For example, every single time you walk to the wash stall, he grabs a hold of the cross tie. Well, put something over the cross tie so you don't ruin it, because once this stuff's on there, it's on there forever. And then put the Rap-Blast on the cross tie. So when he goes, and I suggest that pretty quickly he will learn that particular cross tie is not worth chewing on.
Very clever. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so you can use, I come at it from different directions. I really like the use that groundwork to get his brain cells working, because he sounds like the kind of horse that he doesn't need to physically work hard necessarily. He needs to make sure he gets the brain cells working hard, because that's where the chewing is coming from. He's not amped up like your classic racehorse. I need to run. He's like, okay, I just need to investigate stuff. And when he does, he gets to react. He gets to interact with his surroundings and his humans and go, oh, this is so much fun.
Yeah. And, you know, every trip from stall to saddle area, I would use it as an opportunity to give him a little drill to work on. Let's walk 3 steps forward and then back up a step. Ooh, and then let's, you know, give him a job so he's got to focus on you. Obviously, you can't like lunge him in the barn aisle, but, you know, kind of walking forward and back and stuff like that, and give him something to focus on instead of just, I'm just going to use this barn aisle as my playpen.
Yeah, it's like a playground. Yeah. And this has helped me a lot. I'm trying to reconfigure my point of view. Rather than looking at it at, I'm going to make you do things, I try to think of it as, let's do some things and see how much fun we can have with it. I try to keep that mindset, because I have found if I come in with the mindset of, we're doing this because I don't want you to do that, my body language is much harder to control, because subconsciously I'm in anger mode.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of where the shift happened for me as a horse trainer. For instance, I was alluding to working with Luke yesterday. I had in mind to work on one thing, and we worked for an hour on completely different things. But it didn't make me mad at all, because I'm like, oh, well, this is what you want to work on today and what you're telling me we need to work on. So yeah, we're going to do that. And knowing that, I never feel like because I had to change my plan and work on something else, or even go back to something basic that I thought we had accomplished, I've never felt like it's ruined my training. It's simply, oh, yeah, this is going to get you to do everything better. This is where you're having trouble. So that's what we work on. You know, it's not like we're getting pulled off track. This is the track we're on.
Yeah. And that can be a struggle for some of us.
Yes, I get it.
Yeah, it is. Well, we're going to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to answer a question from Tracy. Yeah?
Indeed.
Easy, effective, and eco-friendly fly control starts with Fly Predators. Fly Predators are the organic, natural way to dramatically minimize your fly problem. Learn more about Fly Predators and other Spalding Labs fly control solutions at spalding-labs.com.
And who is our next auditor question, and what's about?
We've got one from Tracy, and it's about progressing a young horse on trails and separating from the herd. Yes. So she says, my two mares work with me at a local barn. An older mare is an 18-year-old mare. She guides trail rides. And then a young mare, 5-year-old, started back to guide short rides. The younger mare does great when she goes to work alone, but calls to my older mare when I take both, and hurries back to greet the older mare when we are returning home. So far it's very controllable and no bolting. Well, that's good. So we're looking for ideas to continue toward my goals of guiding off of younger horse safely. It's good that you're tackling this now, where it's, you know, pretty manageable, and it sounds like it's classic manageable buddy sour behavior, which is normal for a 5-year-old who's still learning and getting confidence away from her mentor. And so because she already does well alone, you have a strong foundation. So you just need to transfer that reliance from the older mare to you, the rider. So some things you can do is practice some structure and separation in your groundwork and writing. You can practice taking the young mare away from the 18-year-old, even if it's just 10 or 20 feet, and then only return when she's calm, and then just increase that that distance and that duration gradually. And I would say you can have situations where you have, now I'm trying to figure out, you're riding them each individually on the trail?
Or yeah, I'm trying to understand. I think maybe the problem is when the younger mare does great when she's out alone, but calls to the older mare when I take both and hurries back to greet her. So maybe
call both to the trail and ride one away?
Yeah. So I wonder if what she's experiencing is something similar to what we have, in that Nigel could care less if I take him out by himself. Mm-hmm. Scooter is his best pal. But if Scooter leaves and Nigel stays behind, it's meltdown time. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if this mare has experienced something where she doesn't mind going out alone, but if she stays home and the older mare goes out, that's a problem. I'm a little bit unclear. Yeah. So, or is it a case of young mare goes out alone, it's fine, but if young mare and old mare go out together with a big group of horses for a guided trail ride, that's when there's a problem.
Yeah, it almost sounds like they're not both on the trail at the same time, but it sounds like they've both been hauled to the trail and the other mare is at home. But in any case, I would work on, you know, when you feel her start to get anxious and want to turn back, give her something to do. So it's not going to be like a punishment, like a why I oughta and I'm going to run you around for being bad. I like to work on two tracking on the trail, and we're going to two track to this side of the trail. So our leg yield is what that would be called. Leg yield to this side of the trail, and then we're going to leg yield to this side of the trail. Or maybe we'll do some serpentines or small circles, or stop and back up a few steps. When you feel her relax and start to listen to you again, that's when, okay, now we're going to go on trail riding mode. I'm going to give you a loose rein and let you just walk on the trail. But as soon as they kind of pick up their excitement again, then I'll do something. Usually something lateral is the best. So again, that serpentine or leg yields or circles, and just work on getting softness, get them their focus back on you. When you feel them, you'll feel the energy kind of leave their body a little bit. And then I go back to trail riding mode. And I would say maybe your management of the mares, you know, make sure that they have some routines at home where they get separated. So separate them for grooming, feeding, or leading, even if it's just for. This is where I tie my horses separate from each other, and I build duration and make them stand tied for long periods of the day. And they learn, okay, even though maybe I can't see my buddy right now, or I can see him, but they're very far away and I want to be near them, they learn how to self-regulate and be okay where, you know, that it's not a cause for panic. If you can feed them separately, where they can be comfortable, where the other mare can be comfortable alone eating, that would be very helpful as well. And it kind of adds a little bit of the positive reinforcement to it. I would say the other thing is, you say there's no bolting yet, which makes me wonder if that is a possibility in the future. If you at all think that that might be, and actually you should just do this anyway, I would make sure you have a really good one rein stop practiced, just in case this behavior does start to elevate. And I don't do the one rein stop when my horse is in a full bolt. If I even smell like they're building speed, I'll just go right to a one rein stop. And I might do 100,000 one rein stops on the way back to the trailer. Anytime they kind of, if I give them a loose rein and they build speed, one rein stop. And I'm going to wait till you stop your feet and you soften. And then I'm going to give you the chance to go again. And if you start building speed and you want to go faster, one rein stop. So I would practice hundreds of millions of billions of one rein stops. Not only does doing that it that much in enhance your ability to stay safe when we do go to full panic mode, but it becomes so ingrained in your horse that anytime their brain runs away with them and you go one rein stop, they go, oh, yeah, you're right. Reset. Okay. And maybe they can hold it together for 5 to 10 seconds before you have to do another one rein stop. But you do enough of these, pretty soon they'll start walking further and further out without you having to check them so much, because they know that as soon as they let their brain run away with them, you're going to shut it down. They'll start managing themselves a lot better.
Yeah. And through repetition and successive approximations? Is that the fancy word they use?
Yes, I believe so.
Little bit at a time. You enter that classical conditioning area where the horse just associates with that single rein, one rein stop, or even the cue to get to a one rein stop. You pick up the inside rein when you're walking along on a loose rein. The horse starts to really, really, really hustle. You pick up that one rein as if you're going to do it, and the horse knows what's going to happen next. They've literally chemically trained their brain that, oh, I just need to take a break and take a deep breath, because he's done it thousands of times before, and that's what happened. So it's such a useful tool. And with the new young horse, I don't practice it as often as I should, because he's not prone to quickness in what we're doing right now. I think he's going to be prone to quickness when things go further down the line. So I need to remind myself to practice it often. You don't have to be in panic mode to practice a one rein stop. Just strolling along, pick up one rein and gently go, come here, nose, over here to my foot. And let's stand still for a minute. I think that's such a great tool to have in your toolbox. Yeah.
It is the best. And you know, the other cool thing that really happens is you mentioned like picking up the rein and the horse starts to manage himself before you finish the one rein stop. If you practice this enough and well enough, I do this with speed demon horses, where if they just can't ride on a loose rein, every time I give them a loose rein, they just go faster, faster until they're panicking. Instead of pulling back on them, I go one rein stop. Are you done? Okay, let's try it again. So with a really hot horse, I might have to do 4 trillion one rein stops, and I might have to do them every 3 seconds. But every time we finish the stop, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give you another chance to ride on a loose rein. What's going to start happening when you do this enough? As you give them a loose rein, the horse is going to start walking forward, and you're going to feel them speed up their feet. And they get a little faster and they get a little faster. But then the horse will go, no, wait, I know what happens when I go into panic mode, and that is one rein stop. So the horse will speed up, and then they'll check themselves before they wreck themselves.
Oh, interesting.
And it's so cool, because then I don't have to do anything. I'm like, congratulations, you've learned emotional control, my friend. So you'll know you're practicing it enough when the horse starts to do that, when they start kind of speeding up, and then they go, no, wait, I remember what happens. The other thing that is, maybe you have a horse that's like, my horse is a steady Eddie, we don't need a one rein stop. I've had it save my butt in situations where I'm in an arena full of busy horses. Maybe it's at a clinic or show, and I'm sitting on my horse calm, and someone else's horse bucks them off and gets dumped, and that horse is T-boning into other horses, and then they're all running around like crazy. I usually, instead of getting off, I actually feel safer on my horse. I will slide my hand down and put my horse's nose to my boot, and I'll just sit there. And my horse has practiced this enough that they're like, oh yeah, this, I know what to do here. I just stay soft and I wait for further instruction. And that keeps me safe, because if that horse comes screaming around at me and does frighten my horse, I've got them in a manageable condition, manageable position to where if they freak out, they're just going to move around in a tiny circle. And I've actually had other horses slam into my horse when I've had them in this position. And my horse, rightfully so, will go, oh, good heavens, and move. But we just move in a small circle. And so we don't add to the chaotic atmosphere. So it's very good for that. Sometimes, you know, if I kick something up on the trail, I wasn't expecting a deer, I'll just go one step. So if you do need to move, we'll just move around in a little bitty circle until you feel better. And then we're good to go.
Well, we're going to take one more break for one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we are going to do our last cue.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
And as I said, everybody, it's Answer Questions for Jennifer Day. We're going to either do novel objects or one-sidedness. Which one?
Oh, novel objects, because I have no idea what that means.
Okay. So, as mentioned before, it's James Day. James has a very strong draw. I didn't even know what draw was before this horse came into my life. When he comes across something that is startling, scary, interesting, he needs to go touch it and preferably eat it. If he can't do that, for example, it's across the road, he has a panic meltdown. He'll do laps for 10 minutes in his field and then go hide in the barn. So how can I help him manage... Whoops, don't want that. Cut there. Potential spam. There we go. 3, 2, 1. How can I help him manage that, his emotional control, that there's something terrifying over there? It's not moving. For example, it's a new flag that somebody hung up at their house that he can see. That it's just there and it's fine. And I'm struggling to help him understand that. It's okay that you can't go touch that. You don't need to panic about it for the next 6 months, because he will literally panic about it every time he sees it for 6 months because he can't go touch it and learn what it is.
Wow. Interesting. And so is this like when you're handling him, or this is him out in his pasture?
Whether he's gotten much, much better when I'm handling him. For example, our neighbor to one side has two flags at the end of their driveway. And as close as he can get to it from our property is probably 25 yards. And he's gotten to the point now that he will get over it. We go up there. It's terrifying. We just stand there and stare at it as long as he wants. And if he wants to stand there and stare at it for 10 minutes, we do. And then the next time we see it when we go by, he only needs to stare at it for 3 minutes. And the next time we need to go, oh, I've seen that many, many times. But he seems to have to stare at it for long, long, long periods of time, because trying to just put him to work and go past it, the meltdowns got dangerous. So that's the method we use. But when he's in his pasture, he doesn't seem to get over it like he does. And what I've started to do is something novel that he can see from his pasture. I will just walk out in the pasture and stand in his area, maybe 10 feet from him, 15 feet from him. And then he gets over it and he goes back to eating grass. The next time it happens, same object, same panic. I'll walk out into the pasture and I'll stand 20 feet away. And I make no effort to engage with him. I just stand there 20 feet from him till it goes away. And then the next time I stand 30 feet away from him, I'm just in the barn and go, hey, I'm here. And then and that seems to help. Now, he does live in a pasture by himself, because if I put him out with the other horses, they beat the living tar out of each other. So we're stuck with that. So is there something else I can do to help him manage that? Because I do put novel objects in his field. I'll throw a ball out there, which he immediately pops. Or I'll put a jump
thing out there. And he's gotten to the point now that he's like, you put that out there, I don't care. It's things that are outside of our property that I have no control over that still seem to set him off.
Interesting. So what if you were to go in his pasture and do some, do you do groundwork with him in the pasture?
Not a lot. No, I do occasionally, but not a lot.
Okay. So I would take him out and do some like groundwork with the thing in the pasture. And every time he's calm, you can go look and inspect at the thing. But if he, or, you know, as close as you can get, but, and if, so I would make his pasture a place where I feel like if this was my horse, I would start doing our groundwork sessions out in the pasture. And I just feel like that would make it less of a scary place for him to feel so alone and panicked. Okay. Also, how often and how long during the day does he get turned out, or is he out there all the time?
24/7.
Okay. Okay.
Now, when I got him, background, when I got him, he was terrified of everything 24/7. And then he morphed to, he was happier in his, if he could stand in his stall and look out.
Uh-huh.
Then he went to that. And then he went to, okay, I'm safer outside. I'm terrified of my stall. And he went through all the phases. He was just terrified of the whole world. He had a very, very limited life experience before he came to my house. So, but he is out 24/7. And I've gotten to the point now where when he gets into his little panic mode and he starts doing laps, I'll go out there and I'll kind of watch from a distance and just let him run it out. Just, mm-hmm. just run until your heart's content. I'm not going to come and save you.
Mm-hmm,
And he has gotten to the point that he'll just run until he gets it out of his system, but he won't go, for example, they parked a new tractor out on the road. He won't go to that end of his pasture unless I walk out there with him. He'll just stay out of the part of the pasture.
Okay. So yeah. And I can't explain why I feel this will work, but if this was my horse doing this, what I would do is I would make that pasture a workplace, a workspace for him. And I would get that horse to where I can control his feet anywhere and everywhere I want all over that pasture. And if something new shows up one day, let's say, you know, one in the pasture, we've got a new tractor parked there. I would not halter him up and demand he go over to the tractor because that kind of pushes them over threshold. I would just do my groundwork like normal. And when he's listening and he's got a calm head on his shoulders, I would say, hey, let's go over and look at that tractor. And that would be his rest area. And when he's had a good look at the tractor, I'd say, okay, you know what? Let's go back over here for a minute. And I want to work more on lunging again. I'd get him, you know, I'd get some good work in with him. And then every time he's calm and thoughtful, I'd say, hey, why don't we go look at that tractor again?
Oh, I like this.
Yes, I don't. If I can all help it, I try never to have them look and inspect the scary thing when they're in that moment of arousal.
I like this.
Focused on me. I'd say, hey, don't look at that. Don't look at that. I really need
but
you
we're
to
gonna we're gonna do right that now. Over here, away from the thing that is you're obsessing over.
Yeah.
We're and gonna I pay attention. Make... We're gonna do things you like to do on the ground. We're gonna focus and deep breath. Hey, let's walk over and get 10 feet closer to that thing that you are so obsessed with. Cool. Okay, now we're gonna go back over here and work a little bit more again. I like it.
Yes. Anytime I have a horse that in any kind of space where they're like, oh, there's all sorts of demons out here and I've got to freak out, that becomes our place where, okay, this is where we're going to work and we're going to get really familiar with every nook and cranny of this place to where I can put you anywhere I need to and you're calm and everything. And I feel like it makes their world bigger and it helps them to settle down. And it's not about punishment and it's not about, you know, oh, we're going to get you real hot and sweaty every time you freak out. It's just, I can tell that your brain is falling out of your head right now. Why don't I give you something to play with and think about? And then when you're calm, So yeah, I'd go in his pasture and that'd be where my groundwork is. Yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay. And then there's section of the property has a perimeter. I'm going to call it a trail. It's a 5-acre property, and there are certain sections that are terribly distracting. I like this, and I can use the same method. We're going to do some groundwork. We're going to do some hard thinking, use those brain cells. Let's go over here to the section that's really, really distracting. We're going to stand here for a second. Okay, now let's mark those brain cells some more. We got them all warmed up over here in the safe section. Now we're going to make them work in the slightly scarier section. I like this. I think this is going to be useful.
Yes, yes. I would, as soon as I can with my horses, my groundwork leaves the arena and it becomes, I can do groundwork with you anywhere. I don't push them over a threshold. If they're absolutely panicked out of their mind, then I will build up to, okay, we're not going to go right into that corner, but we're going to work 50 feet from it and see how you do. To where every nook and cranny of that property, the horse is familiar with. And then I don't really have that issue with any of my horses. If I park something over here or if something shows up across the street where they just run and run and run and run and run. And I think it's because they've just kind of gotten comfortable in their environment in that way.
Yeah. I think the frustration for him stems from the fact he's not running away from it. But he can't get to it.
He wants to go see it.
He wants to go touch it and see it and make kill it dead, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in any case, his brain, he just kind of gets a little over threshold. And so
he's the king of over threshold.
Let's talk you off the edge of the building.
Yes. Talk him off the bridge.
Yes. Yes. And see if you can process it better after that.
Yeah, I like this. This is stuff I'm going to work with. Yay. And I will update everybody next month when Mary comes back on. And before we close up for the day, it's going to be a little bit of a short show because we're sharing bandwidth because Glenn's recording at the same time. I wanted to give everybody a quick update. We talked a lot a bit about Barn Sour and Buddy Sour horses and how it's such a long process, one tiny little step at a time. And as suggested on the show a few months back, Nigel, who is permanently attached to Scooter. Scooter doesn't much care about Nigel, but the other way around, Scooter has to go up to our round pen to go around and trot on a regular basis to keep him from getting obese or getting more obese. Nigel has a panic meltdown and generally hurts himself while he does that. So I would have to take Nigel along and he'd have to stand up there while Scooter got lunged. And it always felt like, that's a reward. I'm rewarding him for giving exactly what he needs. He's not learning anything here. Mm-hmm. So we started out with Nigel walks along, but Nigel has to stand 25 feet from the round pen while Scooter gets lunged. Got really good at that. Then Nigel went along and had to stand 35 feet from the round pen while Scooter got lunged. Got really good at that. We are now to the point that if I take Scooter out, Nigel is fine. If Glenn takes Scooter out, this is how tuned in they are. If Glenn takes Scooter out, we have to back up a couple of steps. So Glenn takes Scooter out. I take Nigel out. And all Nigel has to do is go to the end of the barn so he can see Scooter walking into the round pen, which is 50 yards away. He watches Scooter go around the round pen once and then says, thumbs up, I'm good. I want to go back to my stall. So I suspect in another few months of Glenn taking Scooter out on a regular basis, he will be the same way. Scooter's going to the round pen. I don't care. So it's working. It's tiny little baby steps. It's been months and months of consistency. If I forget and Glenn takes Scooter out and I don't open Nigel's stall door so he can literally lock three stalls length to watch Scooter leave, he gets a little panicky. Oh, okay. Open the stall door. Not like yesterday, all I did was literally open the stall door. Nigel hung his head out and watched Scooter leave and went, oh, I'm good. Close the stall door. He's a happy camper. So tiny little baby steps. They're working.
Yay! That's called growth.
That's called growth, personal growth. Well, speaking of personal growth, thank you very much for answering everybody's questions today, including mine. For folks who want to stalk you appropriately online, enjoy your training techniques, buy your amazing artwork from you, have you come into a clinic at their property, how can they do that?
You can find me on Facebook, Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship, or the other company, which is our artwork, which is Troublemaker Trading Company.
Da-da-da. And we will see you next month with more listener Q&A. Mary is here every month on the first Thursday. See you next time.
See ya.